Hi, you're listening to After Dinner Conversations, short stories for long discussions. What that means is we get short stories, we select those short stories, and then we discuss them specifically about the ethics and the morality of the choices, the characters, and the situations put us in. Why did you do this? What makes you do this? What makes us good people? What's the nature of truth, goodness, all of that sort of stuff? And hopefully we're all better, smarter people for it, and learn a little bit about why we think the way we think. So thank you for listening. Hi, and welcome back once again to After Dinner Conversation, Short Stories for Long Discussions, where we get short stories, we discuss them, we discuss the ethics and the morality of them. We get our stories from the magazine that we publish every month. You can get it for $4.95 for a year subscription on our website, afterdinnerconversation.com. Like and subscribe, support us on Patreon, etc., etc. I'm your co-host, Colby, here with Ashley.
Hello.
And with Jeremy.
Hi.
And Sarah.
Hello.
Hello, Sarah. Okay, so our story this time is The Devil You Know. This, unlike last week, is a very easy story to explain. There is not much to it. It's a shorter story. It's not like a little mini novel. It is literally, it is by David Wiseman. Dude walking down the street in his little quaint small town, and he looks across the street and he sees someone and he's like, I think that's the devil. Because he can see the legs are like goat legs, and he can see the horns and a little tuft of hair that like, and he's like, and then he sees that the devil's got like two or three like little devil minions that kind of look like him, little horned legged people with him. And he walks up to the devil and he's like, hey, are you, the devil's like, yeah. He's like, well, why are you here? And he's like, well, I'm on vacation for the holidays, for Christmas. And he goes, shouldn't you be like, you know, working? And he's like, oh, no, I incorporated years ago. I outsource all that now. I only check in like every decade or so. We move around from town to town. I love coming here for the holidays. It's so pretty, blah, blah, blah. And the guy is obviously confused that he's meeting the devil. And he asks, you know, a couple of rudimentary questions, finds out the kids are like 700 or 800 years old. And that the devil now basically does his deviling through corporations. And he's really, you know, he's a figurehead devil at this point. And the guy sort of finishes the story by saying like, hey, should I like challenge you or like, should I try and confront you? To which the devil is very dismissive. And he's like, are you magical? Do you have a magical weapon or do you just have those knitting needles in your bag? And the guy's like, I just have the knitting needles. And he's like, yeah, then we can do that if you want, but that's not going to go well for you. And the guy says, well, all right, I'm not going to fight you for honor or whatever, but at least you didn't get my soul. And the devil's like, you sure? Because we've got a file on just about everybody. And that's where the story ends. And so it is a very, it's more like one of our traditional stories we normally talk about, where it's a sort of short, one trick, one, good trick, but one sort of question story. You know, not a ton of plot development or anything like Black or White or whatever we had before. You know what it reminds me of a little bit is, what was the story with the lady with the, we had to keep choosing how the people in the raft would die. Was it called Choose?
Yeah.
Where it was just like a really short story that would just like, new scene, new scene, new scene, new scene. Anyway, so that's where we're at. Did I miss anything? Did I forget anything in my little description?
Oh, the devil has his children with him.
He does.
That's just a side thing. He's got, was it three?
He said he can't remember if it's two or three. Yeah.
He can never remember. And he asks them, how old are your kids? He's like, 8 or 900 years old.
Right. He's like, it was during a crusade. Yeah.
And Ashley's right. It's important because the devil actually mentions it several times. Like, here in front of the kids, you really want to do this?
Oh, that's right. He does.
He like, makes
do we
it
really
want to?
Yeah. Do we want to fight in front of the kids? Yeah. And so I'll tell you, like, I picked this story to go in as our podcast, and I picked it for the publication. I'll tell you why I picked it, but I'm curious if there are other things. Because sometimes I pick stories and you guys are like, oh, that's not why I thought you picked it at all, or that's not why I liked it, or that's not what I got out of it. I picked it for a simple reason. And it was just this idea of like two reasons. Number one is Do you have an obligation to confront evil all the time? And number two, if somebody is, you know, an evil person or does bad things, are they allowed to just be, like, left alone when they're not doing evil? Right? Like, so if you know someone's a serial killer, like, is it your obligation to, like, torment their life forever? Or, like, every time you get the chance? Or do you torment them only during tormenting time? If that makes sense. So those were the two questions that I got out of it that made it really interesting to me. And of course, the character, I think, decides, you don't have to fight evil all the time, or certainly not with just a set of knitting needles. Like, maybe come better prepared. And I think he just decides, like, look, like, Satan's not hurting anyone right now. He's just coming home from, like, grocery shopping or something with his kids.
He's not even doing the work. He's outsourced the work.
Right.
There's so much, like, there are so many amazing layers to this.
Yeah.
Like, the whole corporate.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
References and the outsourcing. And I loved the part where the devil says, most people just look the other way and pretend like they don't see me. And I'm right. Like, yes.
Absolutely.
Totally. Mm. And so the decision the character makes at the end is like, this is what people do.
Right. Look the other way.
You know.
Like, I've got my own life.
Helpless. When confronted with the full spectrum of evil in the world, it's easy to become overwhelmed and go, not this time. Or, I'm just one person.
I'm just too busy.
What can I possibly do?
Right. What can I do by myself?
Right. So I loved this story. I thought, mm-hmm. Very short narrative, the author tells a really compelling, like, parable? Is that the right word that I'm looking
at? Yeah, it's a parable.
Something like that. Yeah.
Well, you haven't been this enthusiastic about a story in a while, Sarah.
I know. Right? I really, really like this story.
Oh, that makes me so happy. That'll make David Wiseman happy, too.
Yeah. Cool. Thanks, David Wiseman. So one of the things that I'm learning, I'm in graduate school, right? And I'm studying theater. One of the things that I'm learning in my directing courses is how to read a play. Mm. And one of the methods they teach us is to read it backwards. And so when I think about this story, you think at the end, like, what happened last? What is the resolution?
Yeah.
What happened immediately before that kind of triggered that event to happen? And so with this particular story, you really get into, you can find layers by kind of reading it backwards.
Mm.
Yeah, interesting. I didn't do that.
I didn't do that either. But did you read this backwards, Sarah? Did you go back?
No,
and
I just started to go through the thought process of, like, okay, so what happens at the very end?
Yeah.
The devil walks away, and the character says, "Well, at least I didn't sell my soul." So that's kind of the resolution. And, you know, the devil makes that passing remark at the end about, "Well,
like, are you sure?
Are you sure? We've got a file on just about everybody, you know." And so, what happens right before that?
Right before the devil walks away. He decides not to fight him.
Right.
Yeah.
And then what happens right before that? And so it's kind of like, why does he decide not to fight him?
Because he
realizes that he's helpless in the face of this all-powerful demon with his children right in front of him, you know?
Yeah.
And you can kind of why and why and why, and you just get into all the layers that are in this story.
I wondered if I think I was reading too much into it, but I wondered if the fact that he didn't confront the devil and fight him right in that moment is him selling out. Like, if you didn't have a file before,
right.
The very fact that you let him walk by means you were a sellout.
Mm-hmm.
Means you made a deal, right?
Absolutely. He didn't really get much out of it.
He did not. Well, he got his life out of it. I mean, I guess.
And
boy, that's some mafia right there, the extortion.
Yeah.
Actually, like, Yeah.
This reminds me of there's always a bad guy in a movie.
Yeah.
And the assassin goes to kill the bad guy, and then he realizes he's there with his kids, and so they can't pull the trigger.
Yeah.
Right? There's always this, because the kids are there. And that's exactly what this reminded me of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here's the devil just going about his business, being a family man. He's still a bad dude. In fact, he's running a corporation right now. As he's walking down the street, he's technically still doing bad things because he's directing others to do so on his behalf.
Yeah.
But because he's walking down the street with his kids, it's like, nope, don't disrupt the peace. Don't want to give the kids a bad impression. And I was just like, it's like every like assassinate the bad dude but can't do it because the kids are there moment.
Yeah, it's weird how like I think, I don't know, maybe just in my mind, I was slightly more willing to give the devil a pass because I didn't see him doing anything. Even though clearly he has put in motion everything that is being done, right? He runs the corporation, right? And so it's this idea of like if you're one step removed from the harm, the people pulling the trigger, you're somehow less guilty, even though you're the one who told them to pull the trigger.
The one thing about it, though, is that even though he wasn't like doing anything right then, he's still bragging about it. Yeah. He's like, oh, we don't send people down anymore. That's full. And I'm just like, wow, just bragging about it to anybody who asks. So it's like,
we can do all of that here anyways.
Right. We can torture you as much on Earth as we ever could in Hell. I thought that was interesting, too.
Oh, it's a very good place, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it is a very good place. Yeah, that's a good point.
You guys do it to each other, man. All I had to do was give you the idea of a singular god, and you just started fighting over who was right.
Yeah.
Yeah, he mentions that in the story, like, too.
Yeah, right. He's like, that was my idea. Oh, you celebrate Christmas? Oh, yeah, it's one of my best ideas.
Right.
Yeah.
That was a clever twist that had never occurred to me. That maybe the devil invented God. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The idea of a singular god.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting that even though the guy in his mind came to the conclusion that I came to a good resolution of not hurting him, you know the guy is going to be tormented by his decision, so in a way that might be hell for him.
Yes.
Leaving the rest of the day for the rest of his life having that guilt or that second guessing if he made the right decision. So yeah, he's making him feel bad. Like right then, like making him live in hell, like having him double guess his decision.
Right.
Because now you feel like you're not the person you wish you were. Yeah. You're not the person who does the moral good. Sorry, Sarah?
Right.
Oh, no. The idea of tormenting ourselves and tormenting each other, like the devil doesn't even have to do it anymore. Like that's kind of his point, is he's bragging about it because he's like, am I even really guilty of this anymore?
Right.
You guys do it to each other. You do it to yourself. You're doing it to yourself right now.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Sarah, I'm going to ask you, since you like this story a lot, what do you think the author, main character should have done in this story?
Oh, there was nothing he could have done.
There is. You know? I would argue you have an obligation to die for your beliefs every time the opportunity presents itself.
Well, I guess that just wasn't a very dearly held belief by this character, was it?
To fight.
Ooh, yeah.
But isn't it a dearly held... I mean, maybe it's not.
It's easy. That's an easy thing to say. That is an easy thing for people who you know, who want to think that way. It's easy for them to say, only because they know it's never going to happen. You are never going to actually be confronted with the devil personified in front of you.
Yeah.
That is a supernatural force appearing in your neighborhood with its kids is never going to happen.
Supernatural force.
Like people deep down know that that's not going to happen.
But I feel like this is a metaphor. By placing him as the CEO of a corporation, you're basically saying CEOs of corporations are all devils.
That's what I got.
Metaphor that's being placed here. Go ahead.
Kill them then.
The what?
The obligation then is not to kill them.
Some might say it is.
Run into Jeff Bezos in the middle of the street, is your obligation to kill him? Like, that seems ridiculous.
It seems ridiculous, but
I don't know. I don't think that's what the author's saying here either.
I don't know. I think it might be what he's leading you towards, or what can be. This can be presented as a metaphor that we have an obligation to fight evil, and evil is the head of corporations. And so there was a story somewhere on a website, and in the comment section, somebody posted, because it was about the top 500 richest in the world. That list.
Oh, yeah.
Of the 1%.
And did somebody say this is my hit list?
No, it was, this should be a to-do list for anybody with a sniper rifle.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Which was then deleted. But
of course. Now he's got an FBI file.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think this sentiment is out there, you know? We want to build, a Kickstarter for build your own guillotines. So.
But see, that's also the point of this story,
because we need to start.
No, I think you're right.
But that's this underlying ethos that's being presented here. is that corporations are evil and we have an obligation to fight evil in that way. But we're powerless by ourselves.
Yeah, yes. I agree. If confronted individually, we will do nothing. But I feel like if you have like the power in numbers, I guess you would say, it'd be interesting if there was other people with him to confront him together.
Right.
Right. And then what happens if you kill the devil? There's nothing.
We read that story. Yeah. That was one of our stories. Yeah. Nothing changed.
Nothing changes because evil is literally just permeated throughout the entire world because of the excellent job that we're doing on our own. So, you know?
I think I have a solution.
Let's hear it.
How about you just don't participate? Like, the if the corporation is super evil, just don't buy from that corporation.
But I
like, or it'd be the same as like, hey, here comes the devil walking down the street. Yeah, he exists if you believe in him. Like, if you feed that fire. Whereas if you hate Facebook, just your way of fighting back is not being on Facebook. Would be kind of like saying it, you don't believe in it. You're not going to participate in it. That's kind of an easy cop out, but I don't know. I saw the devil as like, I don't believe in the devil. Yeah. So I'm just going to, if I don't believe in it and feed into it, then it's.
I agree with Jeremy's comment. Like, I hadn't thought about it when I read it, but now that you say it, I think about it. I agree with you. I think the idea that he's trying to fight the devil with knitting needles, that's what he has available. That is, I think, a strong metaphor for like our individual abilities to fight anything that we consider to be this conglomerate of like bad actors or bad actions within the, you know, in our world. Like whether it's voting, whether it's shopping, whether it's, you know, whatever, like you never feel like you're equipped with more than like a set of knitting needles as an individual.
Right.
Right, and the whole thing is it's the evil that convinces people that they are ineffective.
That they're alone and ineffective.
Right, because it's only my vote. The one vote doesn't matter. Because you're only thinking about your vote as being a singular, lonely thing, and it is an evil structure that has convinced you of that.
Right.
Mm. Right? So, you know, that story, so many layers, man. It's talking about so many things. You can just apply it in so many different ways.
Yeah.
The ballpoint pen cap was interesting, too, how he clutched it. And then when he realized that he wasn't going to fight the devil, he let it go.
Oh, I don't even remember that part.
He reaches in his pocket to see what he has. Yeah, that's, and all he has is a ballpoint pen cap. Mm.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. Oh, my God. Yeah.
Like, you've got nothing, you know? You don't even have the pen.
Yeah. You didn't even have the pen, you just had the cap.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting the way the devil was, and I didn't think about this when I was reading it, but you're right. The devil was so dismissive. The devil wanted to make sure that he knew he was powerless. Right? And that's.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to extrapolate this a little bit more. The fact that he's like, I have all the information on you, it makes me think that, look at social media. Mm-hmm. Just for an example, like he's like, for example, all the information on Facebook or TikTok or Instagram. And he's like, when the devil's like, I already have all the information on you. I'm like, that's a great parallel to like social media stuff. It's like, you want to take me down. I have all the information on you. Go ahead, try. And it's like, whew, that's deep.
Yeah. All right. So are we all, am I the only one who thinks you should have stabbed him with the knitting needles? Am I it? Am I one of three here?
I would have stabbed him.
I
say that, but would I in the actual time?
Right.
The thing is, he's got his kids there with him, which comes back to every action
their
movie.
Their kid needs to know what happens when you're the devil. You get stabbed with knitting needles.
Do you got to kill the kids too?
I have to ask them what they've done with their lives.
Right?
I mean, they are the devil's spawn.
Yeah, but I'm not going to punish the kid for the crimes of the parent. Maybe they're good kids. Maybe they're going to grow up to, you know, work at the post office.
Going back to every single action movie, you killed my father. I seek revenge.
That's an excellent point. All right, I would kill the kids. You're right. You can't have them get you in the sequel. That's a good point. All right, so Ashley and I are both... We would like to think we would use the knitting needles. Are you guys both nose? Which tells us, by the way, we're dating the right people in this story.
Just say no to evil. We will fight them together.
I would watch that movie, by the way. A person who tried to kill... I would watch this movie, by the way. If this was turned into a short film, I would 100% watch this as like a 7 or 8 minute short.
Yeah.
So I think, I don't know, because I'm the type of personality that's like, you got to at least try.
You know. This is why I'm thinking you're like a freaking teacher. Like, in my mind, every teacher's answer should be, I would brandish the knitting needles.
I know. It's such an interesting thought experiment in this story that I'm like, no, nobody does that. But, you know, you got to at least try. If we're talking about this totally metaphorically, like, yeah, if you see something, you have to do something about it.
I'm so glad you didn't say something. See something, say something.
Oh. But if you see something, that brings up a good point. Why didn't he say anything? He's like, oh my gosh, I think that's him. Does nobody else see him? Am I the only one that sees him?
Everybody else looks the other way, and then you're crazy.
Which is also the metaphor of it as well, too, is like nobody sees the evil because they choose to no longer see it. I noticed that as he was writing it, too. Yeah. I'm always reminded, like, Ashley and I have had this discussion before, where it's like, it's not my obligation to change the world. I don't have a moral obligation to change the world. I have a moral obligation to try to change the world.
Hi, this is Colby, and you are listening to After Dinner Conversation, short stories for long discussions. But you already knew that, didn't you? If you'd like to support what we do at After Dinner Conversation, head on over to our Patreon page at patreon.com/AfterDinnerConversation. That's right, for as little as $5 a month, you can support thoughtful conversations like the one you're listening to. And as an ad incentive for being a Patreon supporter, you'll get early access to new short stories and ad-free podcasts, meaning you'll never have to listen to this blurb again. At higher levels of support, you'll be able to vote on which short stories become podcast discussions, and you'll even be able to submit questions for us to discuss during these podcasts. Thank you for listening, and thank you for being the kind of person that supports thoughtful discussion.
I don't have a moral obligation to change the world. I have a moral obligation to try to change the world. I'm perfectly willing to fail.
Yeah.
But I have a moral obligation to try.
Why doesn't he cry out? Like, go back to Ashley's question really quick, because I don't think we answered it. Why doesn't he cry out? Because I know that the devil threatens him with, oh, people are going to think you're crazy.
Yeah.
But what is that the metaphor? Like, where... If you're confronted with evil, you speak out and people say that you're crazy.
They're like, no, you can't. No, he's just fine. Everything's great. Like, I would think of like corruptness behind the scenes within like the bigger industries. And we just turned a blind eye to it. We're like, yeah, whatever.
He's just a guy here with his kids.
Right.
What is he doing right now that makes him a threat?
And he gave us 10, right. What is he doing right now? You know, he gave us like $5,000 towards our new bike skate park. Like, he's a big donor. He's a pillar of the community.
Or maybe, like, don't complain so much. Maybe you should lighten up.
Right. He's not doing anything right now.
So going back to that, with us being all high and mighty, we would confront the devil. Here we are with brand new, like, whistleblower information from Facebook that Facebook knows that their algorithm is bad and doesn't change.
Yeah.
We know this information, and we are both active participants on Facebook.
Yeah.
How does that make you feel?
Are you talking about the Instagram thing, too, with the research about young girls? And
They know all of that. So how do you feel? Like, here we are saying we're high and mighty and we'll take down the devil. And
all right, I have a response to this, though. So I would say that the thing that makes this story so genius in one way is that it's not 99% evil, 1% good comes from it. So, like, I have no doubt that Facebook is, like, bad for you. But are there good things that come from it? Yeah, like you get to Skype, you get to, you know, voice chat with your, or video chat with your parents when you want.
Yeah.
People get to connect with old friends, like, and so like
there are ways to do that.
Right, it might be 70% horrible, but it's 30% like a useful tool, right? And I feel like that's one of the things about this is that
they've monopolized this platform to be the only provider for a lot of that.
Yeah.
A lot of those things.
But like, yeah. I feel like those are excuses to turn a blind eye. Whereas Jeremy said there's a bunch of other platforms where you can still do those activities and engage.
Are they all owned by the same people?
But they're all, though? Right, that's the problem, is that they're all, like you talked about, you know, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Yeah, that's all the same company. You know, it's, Twitter might not be. But
Twitter's not. But when Facebook went down, they had to post it on Twitter, I saw.
Right.
Because there was no place to post, post it. Because they own everything.
Somebody stated, you know, the problem isn't that Mark Zuckerberg shouldn't be the CEO of 3 billion people's social lives. It's that that position should not exist.
Yeah, I agree. That's tough, man.
So then that brings up the question of what degree you like to bring the, sorry, I'm going back to this, but you mentioned, 70% evil, 30% good. So now we're playing a game of percentages where you actually stand up to face a bad guy?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great question. I mean, I think the issue is you try and figure out, like, does enough good come from this that I can mitigate the bad that comes from it? Or can I not, right? I mean, because, like, it's the same thing. Like, are guns bad? Mostly. Are they entirely bad? No. Like, you know, is fill in the blank with whatever, cars or like nothing is like, I don't know.
Right.
It's just tough. Jeremy, are you a no? Are you a no? Leave the, let the devil go in this case?
He's just trying to have Christmas.
Right? Doesn't the devil deserve Christmas?
Yeah.
He brought you your God and brought you your Christmas. He's great. So let's just let him keep doing his evil because he brought us those little glimmers of good or happiness, I should say.
I mean, like, and then, I'm sorry, Jeremy, you should answer before I start.
I don't know the answer because it is a pointless action in that moment.
It is. It's a symbolic act. It is a purely symbolic act. Yeah.
You know, and... You know, there still is value in that, you know, and if we all did those things, that would be right.
All right. I have one for you then. And this is a person I do not like, so I'm not going to name their name, but I will tell you what they do. Every time I've ever gone out to a restaurant with them, they get a drink. It comes out with a straw, like a plastic straw. They hand it back to the server. They chastise the server about the plastic straw. They insist on talking to the manager about the plastic straw. And they insist that a person should not get a straw in their drinks unless they specifically request it. Every freaking restaurant, like every time like clockwork, like you're like, I might as well just show up 5 minutes late to lunch because they're going to spend the first 5 minutes demanding to speak to the manager about how people get straws. Mm-hmm. And of course, this person also then proceeds to take out their metal straw that they carry with them everywhere, that they clean it like at home. And so it is
stabbing the devil.
And it's a relatively pointless symbolic act. Like you're literally yelling at your waitress, like he or she doesn't control whether or not if they have plastic straw, like if the straws are there. But it is a symbolic act.
It's a symbolic act, and if enough people do it, then the restaurant industry will change.
Right, they would just quit bringing out straws unless, or they'd bring paper straws or something.
Right, and we do see a lot more paper straws lately.
So what do you think of my Karen friend who does this every single time?
It's both annoying and,
Well, I mean, if you're stabbing at the devil, you're stabbing the wrong person if you're yelling at the server and the manager.
Yeah.
Well, but I mean, that's you can't. Right. Who do you have to? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Who do you have to do this to? If you do this to enough servers and managers,
you're going to get kicked out of all the restaurants and nobody's.
It flows up the chain.
Well, I don't know if this person. I've never gone to McDonald's with them, so I don't know what they do at McDonald's. I'm just saying, like, if you go to like a sit down restaurant, like a whatever, they make a fuss and they wait to get the straw. To then tell them they didn't want the straw. Like, they don't preemptively say, I don't need a straw. They, like, make sure they get it to make the point.
It sounds like they're tormenting themselves. It really does.
I feel like there's a different way to go about it. I feel like if you can get an appointment with the manager who's running the restaurant and just be like, hey, this might seem like little nothing, but you might consider, it'll save you money and it'll help the environment or whatever their motive is. Have you ever considered just making straws optional and just have the waiter or waitress add into their repertoire, what would you like to drink, and do you need a straw with that? Like, I feel like that the way that they're going after it, yeah, it's like stabbing the devil, but I feel like there might be a different way to go.
A more effective way?
A more effective way, a more meaningful way.
Is that something you could work with your city council on to get the city to...
There's not the votes. That's the only reason why it wasn't done. So that's why this person did it this way.
Okay.
I do commend...
There weren't enough votes. There weren't enough votes to make straws optional.
Okay.
I do say, but
so they did try that first. Sorry.
For your Karen friend, to have that guts and to really have about it though. Like, I give them props though. Like, strongly about something. You have to be like, you are seeing this through. What, and not caring if you're never going to be able to go in that restaurant again. You got to say your piece, and they know who you are, and they know what you were talking about.
I mean, I said at least three times while this person did this over the course of years. Yeah. And again, I'd go and I'd just be like, yep.
It's commendable.
This is my friend. This is what they're doing.
In some ways.
Yeah, in some ways. Yeah. But I wonder, I mean, is that a good analogy, do you think, to the story? Or is it not really, in my mind, that's the clearest analogy I could imagine, where it's a futile act, but a futile act that like... makes you feel like you're trying.
Do you do that at every store where you buy a six-pack of soda? Do you go to the manager and say, you shouldn't be packaging sodas in these rings? Because
yeah, I don't know where the environment. Well, that was the comment that I made to this person. Well, I was like, where do you stop?
That's not exactly a direct comparison, though, because the server is putting the straw in there.
Right.
The store manager is not putting the rings around the...
No, but they're purchasing. So
oh,
you're,
I see what you're saying.
You're
I
see what you're telling some better the option? Vendors or the, you know, the,
yeah.
the end...
Yeah, I don't know.
...organization that they need to put pressure on their vendors to change.
Yeah, and I don't know if this person did this with other things. Presumably there are other things you could think of if you really thought about it, where it's like a relatively small thing that they could just, you know, change. Like... I suppose you could just tell like a convenience store, you know, you don't have to sell cigarettes. Like, you're not required to sell them by law to anyone. You could just be a convenience store that doesn't sell cigarettes. Like, but I feel like that's just I hate to say this, but man, that's a miserable way to go through life. Like,
right.
Fighting every fight continuously. Like, I don't know if I'd want to be friends with that person.
It's a lot of effort.
Isn't that what a lot of like people that choose to team up with a nonprofit, like that's like their MO, that's their gives their life meaning. And so maybe for your friend, this is their thing.
Yeah.
So it brings up a good point. So let's say you do stab the devil and you are one person. Let's just be honest. It's the devil. Are you even going to be able to take him down? That's another thing to consider. Like, it's one thing, do you want to attack him? But honestly, are you just going to make things worse for yourself? Like, example, yes, your friend.
You're going to make things worse for yourself as a symbolic act because no one else will join you.
Right.
But if everyone did join you, then it wouldn't be a symbolic act. All right, I'm going to throw one more out here for you guys.
Vigilante justice.
Right. I'm going to throw one more out here just to mess with you. And this is for Sarah, since she's been quiet. I know she likes a story.
I'm letting you guys talk.
What about the Norwegian kid, Greta, whatever her name is?
Right, Greta Thurn, something.
She's loud and...
Like, that is literally one person who is just like, I'm not going to go to school anymore. I'm going to go on strike. That, like, literally, that was... If you did the day... If she were my kid and she's like, I'm going to not go to school anymore. I'm going to go on strike because of climate change. I'm going to be like, let me tell you this story about the devil and the knitting needles. Go to school, kid. Like, get a job, make money.
Right.
Like, you know, become a politician, change the laws, blah, blah. But she, like, by some miracle, like, her life matters.
So, if you're going to stab at the devil, you got to make sure other people see you. Because that means that other people are...
Like, put it on social media?
Alerted to the presence. I know, right? Alerted to the presence and motivated to also take action.
Yeah.
That's what... Thunberg?
Greta Thunberg.
There's no R in there. I think it's Thunberg or Thunberg. I'm embarrassed.
Well, however we're saying it, we're going to be saying it wrong. Because she's, whatever, Norwegian. Something Scandinavian.
I just heard it pronounced the other day too.
Greta Thunberg. Thunberg.
Right. So
thank you.
So she was able to bring light, I mean, to a situation we already knew, but her point was there's no point in me going to school. There's literally no point in me growing up to become a politician to affect change because right. by the time I get there, it's gonna be too late. Yeah. I have to do something right now, even though I'm 13, 14, 16 years old.
Yeah, I think she was like 13 or 14 when she started.
At the time, right. And opened herself up to a lot of criticism, right? The everybody's going to say you're crazy and you're going to be spending Christmas with the guys in the white coats. Opened herself up to a ton, and her parents up to a ton of criticism, which they absorbed, you know?
Yeah.
But it was... somehow became very visible and inspired others to take action. So if you're going to stab at the devil, you better be like
hoping. You better do it in public.
You better hoping that it's inspirational in some way. So that other people join you, I guess. I mean, I think that's where you were going with that. I think that might be where the author's headed with it. It's one of those, it's a good question.
I mean, I think, and I don't, you know, someday we should have an author on one of these just to see. Or better yet, we should do the whole podcast, have the author listen to the podcast. And then include the author's response as like the last 5 minutes of the podcast. That'd be really interesting.
That'd be awesome.
Like give them a response stamp, like a response thing. Yeah. Except for that one guy who was like, "You guys got it all wrong. I hate you."
Can we do this, like a surprise thing? Like we don't know. No. And then Colby's like, "And we have the author here."
Yeah. Right. No, but actually,
Jeremy, you were right.
Even would have been good with that guy to get his response in.
Yeah.
In a constructive way, where it's not just an email back to you, it's a, okay, here's my answer to all of this in a 5-minute segment that's attached.
Yeah. So here's my
guess. I've always got questions.
Yeah.
So here's my guess. Here's my take on what the author's message was. And that is that I agree with you, Sarah. When confronted with something that we know to be evil, it feels like we are too small and it is too powerful and we are too overwhelmed. And that our lives are too busy and it's just not the right moment and our lives are meaningless. And so we choose a quiet sleep over a brave struggle.
And it's a wonderful, like, kind of motivational story as well, because it's like in that meaningless is where the evil lies, in that feeling and sense of meaningless. So in order to truly affect change, you have to believe that you have meaning.
Yeah.
You know, you have to really believe that you can affect change and that your life is important.
Ugh.
Great story.
Yeah, great story.
Let me I'm motivated. I'm going to go teach tomorrow.
Yeah. Let me just make sure we didn't miss any questions. I don't think we did. I mean, we usually are pretty good about... I only actually could come up with 4 questions for this. When I actually wrote the questions, I was afraid that I wouldn't be able to come up with enough. Oh, yeah, one of the questions I listed is what questions, if any, would you ask if you actually met the devil? Which I feel like maybe wasn't the theme of the story now. Maybe that was a bad question on my part.
Yeah, it's a metaphor.
Yeah.
So what questions would you ask any person who is responsible for great evil?
Yeah. I mean, the question is why, right? Yeah. The question is why.
I'd be like, what's your end game?
Right.
Yeah, what's your why?
Interesting.
What's your end game?
Is it just to die rich and like roll around in piles of money?
Isn't that what you always think about the super conservative people in the United States? What is the end game? What does your utopia look like? You know?
Oh, yeah.
And you shudder to think about what it might be.
Kristen Cinema, like. What's your end game right now?
You know,
accepting money from Big Pharma just to keep, you know.
Yeah. I think for a lot of people, and I'm not, you know, not Christian cinema, I'm not going to comment just on her, but I think a lot of people, the goal of power is power.
Yeah.
Right? Like, the thing I want is to keep having this thing that I want.
Is it that these people have looked evil in the face, decided they can do nothing about it, and figured, well, I'll just get mine while I can?
Could be.
That's what it feels like.
You know.
So maybe the first time you meet the devil and you keep walking, maybe that's your first step towards that path of, like, now being the next evil.
Yep. And what were you saying about people being willing to inflict suffering on others for lower taxes?
Right.
There's no amount of suffering people won't be able to be willing to inflict on others in order to achieve lower taxes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's not happening to them.
Yeah. And a lot of examples of that.
I just need this bigger. I don't care what happens to these people. I just need me higher.
Right.
Yeah.
As long as I got mine.
Right. I will elect all these people. Right. Because they're going to get lower, you know, get me lower taxes, even though they're also pushing racist agendas, any sort of, you know, bad social agendas.
Yeah.
They looked evil in the face and decided that this is the way it just is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gonna
complacent
do anything about it.
Complacent. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
God, now I feel guilty. So one of the things
this says it's a roller coaster.
Oh, actually, jump in.
So if that's our consensus, that people are just kind of rolling over, like, belly up, this is just how it is.
Mm-hmm.
Is the way to combat this to give people, making them feel good about themselves, having them feel like they have worth and value? Is that the key? Because if you feel like you have worth and value and you can elicit change, that's how you fight evil.
So,
I feel you on that, Ashley. Yeah. 100%. I totally feel like that.
So there's this thing on YouTube that I've watched like a million times from Steve Jobs, where he was giving a speech. I don't know if it was a graduation speech or what, but I forget now. But he basically talks about, like, look, people think that life, your job in life is just to go through life and to, like, not get in too much trouble. He's like, and then one day you realize that everything around you, everything, was made by someone no smarter than you. Because they, unlike you, believe that the world around them is constructed by their choices. As opposed to, these are all the things that are around me that I just have to live in, right? Like, somebody wanted a better orange juicer, and so they made it, right? Somebody wanted a different kind of world, and so they invented it. Like, and I think that goes to your point, actually, is, like, this idea of realizing, like, I'm as qualified to change my surroundings as anyone.
But I think that starts with the core value that you deserve something better, which is making you...
Yeah.
I think feeling worthy.
Yeah. Man. I feel miserable now.
Sorry.
Sarah's
feel great.
Sarah's going to go change the world.
You feel better about teaching tomorrow now?
I do feel a little bit better about teaching.
That's good.
Right now.
Yeah.
Thanks,
It makes me feel like I should spend more time on getting stories and getting... I feel like I should... Like, I haven't done the January magazine yet. I feel like I should... Bit more time making the January magazine now.
So if anybody out there who's been following After Dinner Conversation and you feel like this is changing you for the better,
send us an email.
Making you feel empowered. We want to keep this going. Forward it to the author. Forward it to After Dinner Conversation, because it helps keep the fire lit. So you're doing more of this.
None of this is what I
meant. When I'm editing.
All kinds of stuff I didn't intend.
This was a very literal story. I don't know where you guys went with it.
Right? It was just about the devil. What are you talking about? I didn't think it was about what, like, I do. I thought it was just about, like, what this guy did.
I read a story about the devil, and now I use a metal straw. How'd you get there?
Right. And now I carry around a straw with me everywhere I go. Dang it! Oh, man.
This story, Colby.
I'm glad you guys enjoyed it. I never know which stories we're going to, like, really mesh with us and which ones aren't. I'm glad that, you know, like, I thought the last one, the black or white one, I was like, best story I've read in months and months and months. And it is to me, But you guys didn't find much to talk about. No, that's okay.
That one was so long, and when we were taking, you know, kind of in between these stories, Jeremy and I were talking about it again, and it was like, you know, I wish we could have started the conversation about 20 minutes into where we were talking. Because it felt like that one took us a long time to warm into. Yeah. And then once we, you know, really started talking about it, well, then we kind of had been talking for too long.
Yeah.
There was just so much there and the story was longer, but I feel like, no, we did like that story. It just took us a long time to kind of get into the groove of the conversation.
Yeah.
So it was just one of those stories that's longer and there's more to kind of like wade through.
I feel like, so we've talked about this before, I feel like sometimes the more we forget we're doing a podcast, the better the podcast gets.
Right.
So we can't go into podcasting cold. We got to talk for like an hour ahead of time.
Yeah, probably.
Beer. There needs to be beer. I mean, I don't know anything that's made worse with beer. I'm just saying. Except for driving. Right.
Yeah.
I want to just be clear. I think driving is made worse with beer. Okay. You've been listening to After Dinner Conversation, Short Stories for Long Discussions. Like and subscribe. Subscribe on Patreon. Get the magazine on our website, $4.95 a year. Send us an email to keep us motivated. That would be really awesome. Once in a while, we get emails from authors, but we almost never get emails from listeners. We've actually had so far this year, we've just crossed over like 10,000 or I forget, 20,000. I don't remember, listens for the year. So it's not like we don't have listeners. We do. Apparently, the authors have relatives. So that's good.
Might be my grandmother, too.
It might be your grandmother, too. She's the one who's sending me the mean email. So, yeah, send us an email and let us know that you're happy to listen. It keeps us motivated. It keeps me motivated when I'm editing these things at 2 o'clock in the morning. All right. I'll talk to you later. Bye, guys.
Thank
Bye.
You.
Bye.
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 If you've enjoyed listening to this, please like and subscribe. It helps us out a ton. You know, the vast majority of people listen haven't liked and subscribed, which means maybe it shows up in your algorithm, maybe it doesn't. So don't leave that to chance. Just go ahead and hit that button, and we'd sure appreciate that. And that way we can keep doing what we're doing, and you're not left to the whims of some algorithm. Thanks.